might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, you fry some garlic, then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? Have a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. How are you doing today? What strange weather this weekend, huh? I was going to be up in Lake County for a couple of days and I decided that the storm yesterday was going to sort of get in the way of my purposes, which were research. So I stayed home and gosh, that wind whipping through where I live in Sebastopol was really something. But, you know, this is March in Sonoma County. And I sort of remember it always being like this, at least for a few days. Got some planting done. That was nice. Anyway, I hope you're enjoying the weather, whatever you're doing. We have a show that I've been wanting to do for a while. We've gone to New Orleans on Mouthful several times. We've had Chef John Besh here. We've had interviews with the owners of Café Du Monde. New Orleans is never far from my mind, and it's certainly never, ever out of my heart. And it's in my heart even more so these days, certainly since Katrina. Instead of doing anything for Mardi Gras this year, I watched Spike Lee's Requiem When the Levees Broke. Really a remark, probably the best documentary I think I've ever seen. And now what happened at Katrina has joined a list that is in my head. I started it when I was actually a very young girl, of things that I want to know before I die. One of them, which also has its own New Orleans connection, who really killed John Kennedy? Don't give me any nonsense about Oswald. That's something I've always wanted really badly. And now one of the other things I really want to know is why Katrina? Why was New Orleans so abandoned? Why was there not outrage in the streets of America? I don't know if I will ever, ever understand that. So no, Mouthful has not turned into, you know, a political talk show. We're still primarily food, wine, agriculture, and culture. Heavy dose of culture tonight. And some live music in the studio. Street music is, to me, inseparable from New Orleans and inseparable from the marvelous things there are to eat in New Orleans. And marvelous things to eat in New Orleans brings me to my very first guest tonight, Maria Villegas. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Sort of a mouthful of a introduction to this topic.
Yeah.
But I feel very passionate about New Orleans. I always have. But now there's this new layer. Now, you were in New Orleans for a long time. Are you from originally?
I was born in New Orleans, uh-huh. And I lived there my whole life. The only time I lived elsewhere was when I evacuated for Katrina.
And when did you initially evacuate?
The day of Katrina.
Uh-huh.
I left at 11 o'clock that morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where'd you go?
I went to Dallas.
Uh-huh.
I have family in Dallas, well, north of Dallas. Uh-huh. And so that's where I went. And it's normally an 8-hour drive, and it took 24 hours to get there.
Oh, my God.
So it was really tough because there were people on the side of the road. Their cars had overheated. Of course, there was contraflow. So all of the interstate was going one way, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, the two ways. And I would say we're probably going 3 miles an hour. So I grabbed my laptop, my two cats, and shorts, T-shirt, and maybe probably a bathing suit because I figured I was going to hang out with my family for a weekend, and I was going to drink and eat and have a good time because they're from New Orleans, and I'd be back. And so we left. I left at 11 and slept in my car in a Hampton Inn parking lot because people started writing no vacancy, no restrooms, things like that, and they were just posting them in hotel and motel windows. I don't know if they had vacancy or not, but I think it was very scary for everyone. And it was like something out of a movie. It was just people were taking off their shirts and waving them, and, you know, people had heat stroke and were passed out.
Yeah, so I think that's one thing that it's hard for people on the West Coast to get a real visceral sense. This was a major storm, a huge storm, but it was also hot, right?
Part of hot?
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's hot there.
But it's hot even when, I mean, if we get a winter storm in California, I've never been in a winter storm that was hot. When we get a winter storm, I remember one time, I think it was in June, the temperature dropped like 50, 55 degrees. The sky clouded over and it started to rain. And it had been in the 90s and it just, boom, in 2 hours it dropped. So that's the kind of storm we're used to here. So I don't think, even when someone tells us, and it's hot, it was 104 degrees, Katrina, all this, I think we have to be told a whole bunch.
And 100% humidity, like, and it's really hot. 365 days of the year, whether it's hot or cold.
Yeah.
Now, you know what's weird? When we had that last storm, not this one that just came in this weekend, this is the truth. I've lived here almost, it'll be 3 years in September. It is the first time that I've ever heard thunder here.
Yeah, you don't
hear
it
very
often.
And I was like, woo! Yeah. I was so excited.
It's a thrill. If you hear thunder and see lightning.
Yeah, I'm used to the skies opening up.
I've been here my whole life, and I still get really excited when there's thunder and lightning.
I was excited. Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, that was thunder? Yeah. I was like, oh, cool. My cats even forgot. You know, they looked at me like, what's up with that?
So you, if you got to Dallas 24 hours after you left.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then I had a glass of wine before noon with my cousin's wife and cried. Actually, I cried when I crossed the Texas line. I called my cousin's wife and I said, I'm in Texas. And, you know, at that time I was going at a regular speed, speed, and I was so emotional. So I got to their house and we hung out and kind of didn't really think about it much, but we did have TV on, the TV on. And then the levees broke. It was just, it was amazing. I wasn't even in the room when it happened. My cousin saw it on TV, and he was raised like my brother. He and I were raised pretty much really close together, and we're both only children. So, so we're like
so
brother
really
and
close,
sister. Actually, he's listening right now, too.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
Is he in Texas still?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he is. So, anyway, we were just hanging out, and I don't know where I was, and all of a sudden I heard somebody scream, the levees broke. And you know how when anything happens that you just go into shock? It's like you just go, what? You know, like somebody if somebody steals your car, you keep saying, where did I park my car?
Sure.
I mean, you just like kick into this weird numbness.
And plus it takes on an unreality.
Yeah.
It's like when we saw in 89 Loma Prieta, I think it, for anyone who was, I think, watching it on TV, yeah, your house shook, the power went out, but it's California. When we saw the image of the gold, of the Bay Bridge, part of the Bay Bridge had fallen. It's like, what, that's,
oh,
I think, a comparable moment.
Yeah.
Though with nowhere near as much damage.
Well, I remember hearing on, it was CNN or it was MSNBC, one of them, I remember one of the news anchors saying, what did that, let's see, how did they say it? Lake Pontchartrain has met the Mississippi River. And I will never forget that. We just all stood there and we were just staring at the TV and just, we just didn't know what to do. It was like total silence. And then all of a sudden, the internet was just flooded. I mean, because immediately I was like, oh my God, do I have a house? I mean, you start thinking, what, you know, do I have, I had a business there for 10 years.
And what was your business?
I had a catering business and, and cafe that I had seated probably, I don't know, maybe 40 people.
What was its name?
Maria's Multi-Regional Cuisine.
Okay.
And
whereabouts in New Orleans?
Originally, I was in a place called Lakeview, which mm-hmm. is really close to where the first levee break was. Mm-hmm. And then when Katrina hit, I was on Canal Street in Mid-City, uh-huh. right off of Canal and Carrollton,
uh-huh.
where if you've ever heard of Mandina's, that's been around forever.
Uh-huh.
Venezia, it's a really great part of town, and it's mm-hmm. called Mid-City. It's Mid-City.
Yeah.
So I started wondering, you know, do I have a house? Do I have a business? And I also started really thinking how grateful I was that my cousin talked me into leaving, because mm-hmm. I was not going to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, I even went to lengths of putting an axe by my attic.
Really?
Yeah. And he called and he said, why do you want to do that? Why? I mean, it's not like you can't leave.
So you people down in that area, you know that you need an axe because you know that you may have to go up into the attic and bust
out of the roof. Oh, we did that for every hurricane.
Okay.
I've never left for a hurricane.
Uh-huh.
And I lived there 44 years. And I've never evacuated. So this was the first time. Uh-huh. And then I was like, oh, wow. Because Katrina did not hit New Orleans head on.
Right.
The eye went over Slidell. Uh-huh. And Slidell is north of New Orleans. It's across Lake Pontchartrain.
Right. And it was the flood. It was
the levees.
It was the levees.
Yeah, the levees weren't in good shape.
Yeah, and they knew that. They'd known that for years.
I'll live there knowing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you go back?
I haven't.
From
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. I went back.
So you did
Let's
go
see.
Back after
I did
your
go
cousins.
Back. A friend of mine gave me a press pass to go back before the mayor said anyone, like the public, could go back.
Uh-huh.
And I went back. It was in late October. And I had friends tell me, when you come in, come pick us up before you go to your house. Because I had no idea.
Yeah.
I heard my house didn't flood.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I kept saying, oh, I'm going to be okay. And they said, no, you need somebody with you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. And I did. A good friend of mine went in the city with me. And I can't even begin to tell you what it was like.
So had your house flooded?
No. It did not, but the roof came off.
So
I had water in the walls. And I didn't know that at the time. Uh-huh. I mean, I guess hindsight's 20/20, but I didn't even think about that.
Sure.
I just was like, okay, well, whatever. But so I knew that I couldn't live in the house, and I remember, this is really funny. I mean, it is now, I guess, but not really. But I guess you have to laugh at some of the things
to
kind of keep your sanity.
Sure.
I remember my friend said I walked in a circle. I just kept walking in my house in a circle. And she said, there's no reason to hang around. Why don't you just grab some things that you need? Because I knew I had to go back to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I was under the impression I was going back to New Orleans and I was going to walk in my house and everything was going to look like it did when I left. And I was going to have a drink and, hang out with my neighbors. It was just like, what am I thinking? So when I saw this, I'm walking in a circle and I grabbed a Nike shoebox and I put... I had a crucifix, and I had, a crucifix on my wall. I put that in there. I put some books, like three books, and I put my Seinfeld DVDs in it. And my friend said, I'll never forget this. She looked at me, and she said, now you're complete. Let's go. And I followed her.
So you didn't take
her.
Clothes?
No. Oh, my clothes were ruined.
Ruined, just so everything was
ruined. Yeah, because everything had caved in.
The water had just
the ceilings,
in.
Everything had caved in.
What about your restaurant?
Finished.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And I had a function for 750 people the day of Katrina.
Oh, my God.
So I had beef. I had salmon. I had you name it. Tons. So that sat in the refrigerator from August 29th until late October. Well, I had it cleaned out. But no electricity. It was awful. It was terrible. So my business had 9 feet of water in it.
Oh,
yeah, it was disgusting. It really was. Uh-huh. And then the bugs had come out. It was really hot. And the smell and just...
Yeah. The book, and the author of the book, One Dead in Attic, Chris Rose,
yes.
who writes for Times-Picayune. It's really, for anyone who wants to get a visceral feel of being in New Orleans, it's a great book. And one of the things he talks about over and over, almost like a drumbeat, the smell.
The smell. My cousin, another relative, sent me the book, a signed copy from him, and I can't. I've thumbed through it. I still can't read it. I am so afraid to read it.
Yeah, it's wonderfully written and utterly devastating to read. But I wanted to know.
Oh, I'm sure.
I really wanted to know. So how'd you end up in Sonoma County?
I have a client who used to fly into New Orleans twice a year and take cooking classes from me. And she found me when I moved back to New Orleans December 1st, 2005. And it was June of 06. My walls had started peeling into my home. I was fighting with my insurance company. They would not give me home. They wouldn't give me money for my home. I got no money for my business. Never received.
And they wouldn't give you money for your home?
Well, I finally got $17,000. Hello. Right. FEMA, I got some money, and I had a roof put on. Well, I had a roof put on when I went back to Texas. I worked on that. But anyway, I was living. It was a nightmare. And I lived in my house for 2 months with no electricity in December, and it was freezing. I didn't know that I had no electricity, and I guess I should have checked. But there was some kind of discrepancy with the electric company, and it was a nightmare. It was really. So I slept on my sofa because I had to get rid of my bed. Because that's part of where the ceilings caved in. And I slept wrapped in a comforter on my sofa with a lantern. And anyway, my client called me in June of 06. And by that time, I had death threats and rape threats from workers in the neighborhood because they saw that I was living alone. And somebody got a hold of my cell phone number. So they called. I got a call. Saying, you know, it was several calls saying that they were watching me and they saw me come and go. And
oh, my God.
So I bought a gun and I was painting my kitchen on a ladder and I had a .38 strapped to my side. And yeah, I was stressed out. I was really and I was trying to work. I was trying to find a job. I mean, there were, you know, the grocery stores closed at 3 o'clock. It was like, where am I going to work?
Yeah.
There was gas stations, you know, were closed. It was I don't know. I guess it was like living in a third, worse than the third world country. I don't know what to compare it to.
There was no community at that point to support you.
Exactly. And then my business, I mean, I had no idea where my staff was. I didn't know where my clients were. Everybody was like so scary because it was like, where is everyone? You know, you felt so lonely. It was just really strange.
It must have felt like the end of the world in a lot of ways.
It did. And it was... I remember at night, my neighbors who lived across the street from me forever, and they went back and they had a generator, so I stayed at their house a lot. And we used to sit outside at night, and we would have a few glasses of wine, and I remember we'd walk outside, and there was no electricity. And the stars, we had never seen that many stars in our life. Because there was no lights, and it was National Guard. They had nothing but... National Guardsmen and helicopters. It was really strange.
Well, we're going to continue with Maria's story, and we're going to move on as well to her cooking and what she is doing with food here in Sonoma County. But we're also going to bring in one of our guests, and soon several of our guests. We have Aaron Milligan Green. Aaron, thank you so much for pulling all these musicians together. One of the things, and Maria, you jump in as you want to. For me, both my experiences, I've only been to New Orleans twice, both my experiences have involved turning a corner and there's a bunch of musicians walking down the street. Or this last time I was walking to my car after being in this little triangle on Frenchman Street, going from one club to another. Just
there's a shocker.
Randomly hearing fabulous music. And we're walking to our car. It's like 1:30 in the morning, me and my daughter. And we hear something. And it's like, no, come on. You know, we'll sleep later. We just got to follow this sound. And we go into this Checkpoint Charlie's. Open 24 hours.
When you do your laundry and sit and have a drink.
Yeah, well, there was this guy up there.
They do. It's nice. A laundromat bar. Oh, it's cool. You bring your dog in.
Yeah, there was this guy, this young guy, sitting up there wailing on a dobro like I have never heard. And certainly in the Spike Lee documentary, there's the jazz funeral. My first time in New Orleans, I was walking back to my car after Jazz Fest and came upon a jazz funeral. And just that tradition. And plus, oh, I even, my second to the last day there, I was walking up from the quarter. I tired my daughter out. She was taking a nap in the hotel. And I was saying, no, I'm going down. So I'm walking, and there was some guy set up a microphone and a guitar, and he actually had a good voice, and he was singing What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. And I just gave him some money and just stood there listening. And as soon as the sound wave changed, there were two guys sitting on the street corner playing some other way. I mean, it's just music everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I opened up the PD, last week, the week before, and I see John Beck talking about Jungle Love Orchestra, and I think maybe y'all playing in Railroad Square on Mardi Gras. I'm not sure if that was when discussion about the trouble started. But Santa Rosa cops are busting street musicians?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's going on?
You know, I don't even point the finger at the cops, per se, and I don't point the finger at the current politicians we have in office, but there is a section in the Santa Rosa noise ordinance which says it's illegal to play any drum or any type of instrument within the public of Santa Rosa. And really, I mean, it's whoever put that in there to begin with. Which is
so it's a city ordinance that we need to get changed.
Exactly. It's a section 16090 of the Santa Rosa City Noise Ordinance.
Santa Rosa City Noise Ordinance, section 16090.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit. Was it on Mardi Gras when you guys were...
No, that was actually a different group. That was the night I met John Beck. I saw a little posting inside the PD saying, uh-huh. Hey, you know, to celebrate Fat Tuesday, there's going to be a group of musicians going around the Railroad Square area and then, you know, recongregating back at the Last Day Saloon. Yeah. So I decided, you know, I had this petition going to overturn that ordinance. I figured that'd be a great place to go with it.
Oh, you'd already started the petition.
Yeah, I started the petition at the beginning of 2009 here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, I went down there, met a few people, met John Beck that night, and, you know, he's been really helpful with bringing the issue to the public awareness.
That's how I found you.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. So you brought some people with you, and you guys are going to play a little music for us. Is that rumor true?
We'd love to.
Well, no time like right now.
All right, sounds good.
So this is four members of the Jungle Love Orchestra, is that right?
Yeah, usually we're about eight people. But last minute, we were able to round up four of us.
Okay. Turn up the heat, pour yourself a nice tall drink, and pretend you're in NOLA. Wow, great. Four members of the Jungle Love Orchestra. It was Aaron Milligan-Green on percussion, Maxwell Church on trombone, Sam Cobble on trumpet, and Ryan Gremick, did I get that right, on beautiful alto sax. Anybody else, any other members of the band want to say anything about the sound ordinance issue that's going on? I know, Sam, you wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, thank you. It's actually Cobble.
Cobble, okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I guess I just want to say to the listeners that we aren't interested in, you know, making a demon out of the cops or the city, like Aaron was saying. And right now, the reason why we're upset is that on the books now, in order for anybody to play, including us, including a guy with a guitar, you have to pay the city $75, and then it goes through some kind of review process. And the police are notified, the fire department's notified, and you have to tell them how many people you think are coming, and is there going to be wheelchair access? And it's like they have like, yeah, right. It made me laugh too.
So they categorize you as an event.
So it really sort of undercuts the whole concept of spontaneity.
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's what we're all about.
Yeah.
And so what we're proposing, or part of one of my ideas, is like, we're not going to tell the city just let anybody play, because we understand the city wants to protect a certain ambiance in the downtown. And I don't think they have to wipe that away completely. But what we're saying is, we're in a separate category from an event. We're not a parade. We're not a political rally. We're a spontaneous musical happening. And mm-hmm. I've coined that phrase because that is exactly what we are. And if we can give a permit, I don't mind paying $75 for six shows over a 6-month period. So
no,
they know, we'll
idea.
Give them the dates in advance. Uh-huh. And whoever's, you know, in charge can know, the cops can know that we're going to be there. Mm-hmm. So we want to compromise and make it, you know, a good mm-hmm. situation for everybody mm-hmm. and make it better for other performers too.
Uh-huh. One thing, that I'll remember forever was this Halloween. I went over to McDonald Avenue, and it was raining, and I had my little 7-year-old grandson, and it's our favorite holiday. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, coming down the street were a bunch of New Orleans style musicians. Yeah. And clearly they had organized themselves and gotten there, but it didn't seem like any big planned event. It had that spontaneous feel. Mm-hmm. And a little bit later, we ended up on the lawn of a house, and they showed up and they just stood there and played for like 20 minutes.
Nice.
And it was so wonderful. And had there been some advertisement, there's going to be this event and all that, it would have been totally different. Part of it is the spontaneity and the surprise and right. the stumbling mm-hmm. upon it.
Right, exactly. And we think that overall, everybody we've encountered has been so positive and kind of surprised at the ordinances. And you know, to the cops' credit, they haven't actually ticketed anybody that I've seen, but mm-hmm. they're threatening the ticket.
Well, I've met, since I've been doing the petition, I've met a number of people who have actually received tickets,
okay.
even one who has had an instrument confiscated from them.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah, taking an instrument is... Did the musician get the instrument back?
I do not know.
Okay.
I don't know that.
And that's what it says on the code, though, is that it'll be confiscated if you...
Yeah.
Confiscated. It doesn't say that written into the section that I mentioned. It doesn't say what they're allowed to do as a reaction, but from talking mm-hmm. with people who have, you know, felt the blunt end of it,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's getting fines and the unlikely but possibility of having their instrument mm-hmm. taken from them.
Now, does it cover even things like, say, you have a picnic at a park with some friends and everybody brings their ukulele?
It simply says, the exact wording is use restricted. It is unlawful to play any drum or other instrument or device of any kind for the purpose of attracting attention by the creation of noise within the city. And that section where it's saying, you know, the purpose of attracting attention, I always have interpreted that as, you know, if you have a tip jar out there.
Uh-huh.
You know, your purpose is to attract attention. It's to bring in tips. Before I even knew of this ordinance, I always thought it's once you put the tip jar out
uh-huh.
was when you step on shaky ground.
Okay.
But just that one section, for the purpose of attracting attention, is uh-huh. so subjective. It allows the cops to decide what your purpose is. And whether you have a tip jar out there or not, they will come and hassle you.
Right.
So, the likelihood is if you were at a picnic and you had a ukulele with you at Juilliard Park, they probably want it, but technically speaking,
they
have written in the ordinance, they do have the right to.
Yeah, because I know some people get together and maybe there's not one ukulele, but maybe there's 12.
Right.
Yeah,
and
right.
they're playing for an hour or two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting. How do people get more information or sign your petition?
Oh, wow. That's
I've been trying to get out there as much as I can.
Maybe you can set a couple of days. He's been on the corner of 4th and D, right?
Yeah, 4th and D in front of Pete's. It's kind of a regular spot.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is
guy
that all my signatures need to be collected within the public of Santa Rosa.
So within Santa Rosa city limits.
Exactly. Because it is a Santa Rosa noise ordinance issue,
uh-huh.
You know, I can't obviously go to Petaluma and have people sign it there.
Sure.
But I feel that if I'm in downtown Santa Rosa in a public setting,
mm-hmm.
and there are people from Petaluma walking by and spending their money in the store, they have a legitimate right to sign this petition, because whether they're an actual resident of Santa Rosa or not, they're still a community member. You know, they can say work in, or live in Petaluma, but they might work in Santa
Rosa. Oh, I see. So you're taking signatures from people who are just in Petaluma, not necessarily residents.
Rosa, yeah. Exactly. I'm taking signatures from anybody within the public setting of Santa Rosa.
Okay. You should enlist the music stores to help you. You know,
we are actually trying to find. We've made friends with a manager at the Ale Works, and we play there in the summer again. We'll probably be there again on Tuesday nights, which is their cheap beer night.
Mm-hmm.
And then also at the Belvedere, they've invited us back. Mm-hmm. I know the owner, Gary, there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get business owners, any business owners that are listening, if they want to sign on, and even if they want to submit a letter saying that they support it, that's important too, because I think that there's a perception within the city. Council that they're protecting these businesses by keeping the musicians out. But we're saying, actually, no, you're going to be enriching the downtown. People are going to want to come here because they know that, hey, Santa Rosa's got cool live street music, and the musicians are cool, and they're not, you know, attacking anybody or something.
It's an addition. It's an asset wherever you come across it.
Absolutely.
You know, you walk through the subway in New York, you walk down any street anywhere, and if there's a musician, you smile.
Right.
And you feel better, and you feel better for 5 minutes, or you feel better for the rest of the day. And I know we've got some, got to go to Lawrence to do some underwriting. And then how about one more song before we start talking to Maria again?
We'd love to.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from our members and from the Sebastopol Farmers Market, now open in the downtown Sebastopol Plaza every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with organic, sustainable, locally produced fruits, vegetables, meats, and cheeses, plus breakfast, lunch, and local musicians. Support also comes from Barn Diva Restaurant, Lounge, and Dining Gardens in Healdsburg, committed to a sustainable and locally sourced menu. Fine food and drinks, brunch on Sunday, or special events for 200. Barn Diva reservations and menu online at barndiva.com.
just great. Jungle Love Orchestra. You guys stick around till the end of the show, and we're going to go back to our chat with Maria. And any of you want to jump in with anything, feel free. So, Maria.
Yeah.
Obviously, I could do two or three radio shows with you. I mean, your story is really compelling. But you also brought something to eat.
I did.
So
I did.
You can.
Break it out.
Break it out as you're telling us the story.
Look, that's what they're really sticking around now. Oh, look, here we go. While we're down.
So while you're doing this, let's sort of move all the way to the present, and then we'll fill in with as much as we can. What do you do here in Sonoma County now?
I resumed my catering business. Mm-hmm. I'm doing some personal chef work, and do not have a permanent location, but I do rent a kitchen in Railroad Square.
And, oh, great.
So I started my business again. Actually, it was Valentine's Day, February 14th of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Maria's Multi-Regional Cuisine.
Uh-huh. And what is multi-regional? Can you describe it more than that, some details?
Yeah.
And I think one of the details would be, what did you bring us?
Well, I brought you, this is straight from New Orleans, nothing else about it. This is jambalaya.
Ah. Jambalaya.
Okay, this is the real deal, New Orleans jambalaya with shrimp. It has Louisiana sausage in it and chicken. So there's your jambalaya. It's more of a brown jambalaya. There are two types of jambalaya in Louisiana. There's a red and a brown. Mm-hmm. And red, of course, has a lot more tomatoes in it, tomato products. And it's just a personal preference. It's like if you look at if you ask 50 people in New Orleans or Louisiana who boils the best crawfish, they all do. Mm-hmm. And they all have a different way of who does, you know, everybody has a different way of making gumbo. It's the same thing with jambalaya. It's just all of what you like. So that's that. And then this is more of a something that I've been doing out here, which is New Orleans meets Sonoma County, where I'm fusing the two. So I did a shrimp and artichoke cheesecake. And it's a savory cheesecake. And the artichokes obviously are from here. And the shrimp, more from New Orleans. I mean, it's
certainly better from New Orleans, shrimp wise.
It's
okay to say that.
It's different. It's a lot different here with shrimp.
We don't really have a shrimp industry here.
No, and you know what? One time I ordered trout from my seafood purveyor, who is in Bodega Bay, so I get everything fresh. Mm-hmm. When I got this trout, I mean, here we go. I didn't realize it looked like a bat. I mean, it still had skin on it, and it was really thin. And I said, "What is this?" And he said, "It's trout." And I said, "From where?" I mean, I don't know why I didn't think, you know, to ask him if they had Louisiana trout or.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just it was.
No,
trout
I've never had Louisiana trout.
Oh God, it's so good! It's so good.
I have a real hard time getting by. I mean, first of all, there's the Gulf oysters. Then there's red beans and rice.
Mm-hmm.
And then on this last trip, I had a real muffaletta.
Oh, my God. I made 2,000 of those last year at Barrel Tasting.
Well, I had one. And, you know, I had one from Central Grocers, but I went to Pearl Oyster Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a muffaletta.
Oh, yeah.
And so, that's about it. And then there's, you know, a stop two or three times a day for some really hot beignets.
Mm.
And then there's, you know, some more oysters.
Oh, oysters, so, oysters. When I was in the city, one of my childhood friends from, actually we've been friends since fifth grade, she lives in San Francisco now. And, I mean, we hang out all the time. Mm-hmm. And we went to Swan Oyster Depot. One of my friends who...
That's it.
Who's probably listening right now. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends in New Orleans who are listening.
Oh, yeah. Hi, New Orleans.
So, hey, y'all, what's going
on?
And wait, they had a St. Patrick's Day, St. Joseph's Day parade. And I was like, wait a minute. Both of these holidays are over. But it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
No, it was just, why? Well, whatever, you know. So, anyway, so they're probably like sipping on beer, listening, you know. So, anyway, so hey, everyone. But, what were we saying? I don't even know what we're saying.
Something about shrimp. Oh, trout. What new? What?
Oh,
Louisiana?
The one that looked like a bat? No. What? Out here, the trout? No.
So was it? How big is a trout in New Orleans? What's it look like?
Wow. I don't know. It's different types of speckled trout. Uh-huh. Rainbow trout is more of what they sell out here. Well, it looks more like salmon. It's a totally different thing.
Are you getting lake trout? Do you get lake trout?
Yes, you can. But there's a limit. There's a limit on how many, you know, how big they can be and, you know, how many you can catch. I don't know. That's probably changed over the years. And then after Katrina, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good question. I mean, mm-hmm. I could find out mm-hmm. from. I still have seafood people in New Orleans mm-hmm. I speak to, and actually was I had a client who requested crawfish for an event I'm doing on April 18th. So I've been looking into mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm.
And we do have local crawfish from the Delta.
I know. I called one company that the name of this company was hilarious to me.
Can you say it on the air?
I guess I can. I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll find out if somebody doesn't like it. But this is an actual company. It's right outside of Sacramento, and I called them last week. The name of the company is Master Baiter.
Oh. Actually, I know the people.
Sorry, it's a name.
I know the people who started that company.
Okay, well, I called them. I was like, oh, my God. You know, I'm calling this place. And so the woman answers the phone, Master Baiter. I was like, oh, my God. So I asked her if they had crawfish. Well, she didn't speak English. And I mean, whatever. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, but she just.
I mean,
I couldn't get.
Hard for customer service.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I said, if I come there, can I taste your crawfish? And I guess she didn't know what I said, and she goes, no. And I said, no, I can't taste the crawfish. And she says, you call back. I was like, oh, God. It was just really. And then I have a friend who's a chef in Sonoma, and she told me that the crawfish out here are a little different from.
Yeah, they are a little different.
Than the crawfish in Louisiana. Yeah. So I'm going to stick getting them shipped.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If somebody wants to cook New Orleans-style food at home, what are the most important things for either for them to know or the most important starting place?
The most important starting place is that you have to have spices. You cannot have salt and pepper only.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to always have bell pepper, celery, onion, garlic. And a lot of, I would say, Louisiana dishes. Not so much New Orleans. There's a difference mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. two, and I'll tell you about that. But a lot of, there's this saying that everyone starts with in New Orleans. It's like, first you make a roux. Because, you know, you start mm-hmm. with flour and
yeah,
oil,
you make a
and
roux.
It's equal parts. So always have flour and oil if you want to do something like etouffee or shrimp creole or gumbo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thickener. You can make it ahead of time, and it's different degrees of it. You can make it, you know, peanut butter color, or you can make a really dark brown roux. They call it the dark chocolate roux. Other than that, I think you should have butter. Anything that's bad for you, have on hand, and you're good.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I think the things that you think are bad for you are really pretty good for you. They're good for your spirit.
Yeah, they are. They
They're
really
good for your spirit.
Are. And if you can't, like, okra is a staple in New Orleans. I mean, people out here stare at me like I have three heads when I say okra.
I know. We don't understand okra out here.
Well, I'm trying to make people understand.
Good. That's a good thing.
It's
a good thing.
Really good.
Okra's really good.
It is
And has something in common with something we do understand, which is Nepali's cactus.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the thing with Nepali's cactus, which I love, I do all kinds of things that are not usually done with Nepali's. I just really like it. But when you have to take the little barely visible stickers out, because, you know, you don't want to touch them and you don't certainly don't want to eat them. But once you dice it up, it almost looks like diced celery, white on the inside, though, and the pale green on the outside. You put it in a dry pan, and it immediately releases that liquidy, albumin-y
kind of
gooey stuff, which okra does, too.
Yes.
Now, if you just cook it long enough, that all evaporates.
Yeah.
And
you put a little vinegar in there, too.
Yeah,
and
you
want
to get it to evaporate. So it's like, don't judge okra by that. Don't judge okra or Nepali's.
It's just fear of the unknown.
Yeah, you got to get rid of both of those, you know, that in both of those foods, and then they're really good.
Oh, absolutely.
I love Nepali's, and I'm learning to cook. It's hard to find fresh okra around here. I know where to get it, but it's not something that I see that often. So I'm learning my way around okra.
That's good.
And pickled okra is really good.
Oh, it is good.
I have
it's
a
good.
Big jar
good
in my refrigerator.
See, there you go. That's another thing. Have pickled okra in case you want to have a Bloody Mary.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
idea.
A Bloody Mary in New Orleans is like a meal. I mean, they shove green beans in it. It's just, oh, it's really good.
I had
good.
One.
You did?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, I'm so shocked. Where did you have one?
I'm trying to remember. Where did I
was
have it?
Ralph and Cacuz used to have really good Bloody Marys. And I don't know if No, I don't think they're still open.
I'm not going to remember right now where I had it.
They put like pureed cucumber and they put some. It's really thick. Oh, it's so good.
It was somewhere in the quarter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We walked there, really. You know, I had a pretty intense. My plane got in late. I was supposed to get into New Orleans at 10 at night. I finally got to the hotel at 2 in the morning. Thank you, United Airlines. And
you still could. You just went out, I'm sure, huh? Unless you were too tired.
I actually went to bed. My daughter was tired, and I was pretty beat. But we got up pretty early the next day, and it was New Year's Eve.
Oh, wow.
It was New Year's Eve day. But we had to go back to Mississippi because she had a party to go to. So we left New Orleans. She dragged me out almost literally by about 3:30 in the afternoon. It's like, no, Mama, we have to go to Mississippi now. But then we came back on Epiphany, 12th night.
Oh, so they started Mardi Gras.
I know.
King cakes.
I learned that King's cake. I have pictures. I have like 3 dozen pictures of King cakes in the grocery stores.
You're kidding me.
No, I just went in all the grocery stores and took pictures of King cakes.
Did you turn it over and look for the baby?
I didn't because we didn't buy one. We didn't buy one. It's like, I'm not going to be able to get this thing home. But we had 2 days. In 2.5 days in New Orleans, and we packed a lot.
Oh, it's not much.
No, it's not much, but my plan is to go back in October.
Okay.
But I don't know why I started on that. Oh, where did I have the Bloody Mary? I'm still trying to remember where I had the Bloody Mary. But one thing I had, to me, this is a quintessential. This is as much a New Orleans experience as Café du Monde and come across a jazz funeral. We'd been driving for a long time, and she wanted to show me Carrollton Avenue. Mm-hmm. I think it was. So we stopped there. She saw a bookstore she wanted to go in, and I was just walking, and I saw this.
Ricardo's?
No, and I'm not going to remember the name of it. It was a vintage clothing store. Packed. I mean, packed. 3 rooms packed. You could barely pull anything off a rack because everything was so cramped. And I walked in, and after about 2 minutes, this woman comes out of the back room with a little cloud. She was like Pigpen. But it was a cloud of cigarette smoke. And she had on really thick makeup. She must have been 6 feet tall. She had on a big hat, dressed to the nines. And she said, well, how are you, darling? And I was still like, oh, I've been driving for 4 hours. And I said, I'm a little rattled. I just got off the road. And she says, well, how about a nice little glass of wine?
She says,
Blanca, go get this nice lady a glass of wine. And Blanca comes out with this old silver tray with a cloth doily on it and this tall glass of warm rosé.
Oh, lovely.
And, you know, few things have ever tasted as good. We were in there for like 2 hours.
And do you realize you could have asked her for a go cup?
Yes.
I mean, if you wouldn't have finished it, you could have said, do you have a go cup? And maybe she would give you a plastic cup.
All the bars have to go cups. And that's
That's why you say you can't play, you know, music on the street. I'm like, what? When I first moved here, I was in a bar. And I was.
You started to walk outside?
I asked them. I said, where are your go cups? And they looked. I swear to God. I'm lucky I didn't, you know. I mean, they just looked at me like they were going to bring me to a mental institution.
First time I ever walked out of a bar with alcohol in my hand was in New Orleans. And it was really, really hard to do. I mean, I knew it's like, wow, there's to-go cups, you pour it. But still, it's so beaten into you in California that it's like, really? I'm not going to go to jail?
Well, as hard as that is, now I have it down pat. But when I first moved here, if I go to the store and get a six-pack of Heineken or something, I mean, your first reaction is to pop open your console and take your opener out. Pop! Oh, yeah. They have drive-through daiquiri shops there.
I know. I saw them.
And all you see is, like, straw paper all by the window because they hand you the straw within the paper on top of the cup because it's against
the law.
The law
to take the straw off.
Well, it's against the law to drink and drive. Hello.
Yeah.
So they hand you the straw on top of the cup, and then people just, you know, you take the paper off and you
throw it out the window.
So you break another law, you litter. And you have the straw paper and you stick the thing in the cup and you drive off. And you drive around the lakefront on a Sunday and you drink a daiquiri and you listen to music.
I took
people playing music.
I took a lot of photographs of signs that say cocktails to go as well. And I also have pictures of the go cups by the doors. Somebody told me
crazy.
My first trip in New Orleans, they said, oh, you can't do that. It's illegal to be in a car with a glass. You can't have, because it might break. You have to have a plastic or paper cup.
Right.
And
you nothing at all.
I thought it was a joke, and they were totally serious. You know, you can't have an actual glass.
No, actually, no glass containers, but you can have all the cups you want. That's why during Mardi Gras, the big deal is Mardi Gras cups. And anybody in New Orleans, I don't have any. I mean, I lost them all in Katrina because they were in my cabinets, and my cabinets were full of mold, and I'm not going to drink out of that. But so anybody who's listening, mail me some Mardi Gras cups. No, really, everybody. I mean, when you're at a party in New Orleans, I mean, everybody's drinking out of Mardi Gras cups. They're just big cups, and that's what people have in their car with their drinks.
It's so hilarious.
Yeah, that's not, well, I guess it's illegal. I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows?
It's bizarre world, but it's great. I mean, it's just really fun.
The other thing, another thing that I like about New Orleans is everyone calls you honey and baby, and you don't.
Darling.
And you don't have to, like, be on your guard. We were walking after, you know, we finished drinking wine and buying vintage velvet.
All right.
We're walking back to the car, and there were these two cops. Sort of out of the corner of my eye, I realized they were busting somebody. Mm. Maybe there were three cops. And they're frisking a guy, and eventually they side him, and they're putting him in the car. But I sort of looked up at him, and he was, first of all, he's really cute. He just looked at me and says, "Hey, baby, how you doing?"
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't like, "Hey, baby." It was like, "Hey, baby." It was like
just
friendly.
Whatever, right.
And everyone, you buy something, and it's like, "Oh, hey, darling, here you go." And it's that southern thing, that southern warmth, rather than here. I mean, sometimes it's hard to get somebody to look at you when you're buying something from them, and they call you ma'am, which makes me want to punch
them.
That
is so weird.
Ma'am.
Because I have a radio show on Saturdays.
And what station?
It's KGGV in Guernville.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah,
up in Guernville.
Little bitty. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know you were up there.
And, so the name of my show is Maria's Non-Pompous Food Talk. And it's laid back, and it's a live call-in food show. And someone called me last week. It was so strange. And they said exactly what you just said. They said they just got back from New Orleans, and they couldn't believe how everyone said, "Hey, honey," and "darling." One other thing is they said people look you in the eye.
Yes.
And they talk, and they're warm, and
they're
grab
warm.
Your hand. And that's what I said. I said, "I hug people out here, and they think I'm nuts."
Yes. Absolutely.
Somebody just told me that, and I don't know.
I felt
that
way my whole life. Until I went to the South, until I went to New Orleans, I thought something was wrong with me.
Really?
We can talk about this forever. It's a California thing. I think that we should blame it on cars. And that whole idea of personal space. Californians are used to having this big old metal tube all the way around them. And in general, Californians are kind of standoffish. There's not that warmth and, you know, pinch you because you're so cute.
Oh,
kinda,
Lord. My aunt used to pinch. She pinched everybody's cheeks and was kissing all over your face. It was just.
Yeah. Here they just act like you're, you know, and I come back from somewhere like that. And, you know, I go back inside my shell after too long. We're not going to have time for another song. Darn it. Because this should have been 2 hours.
I know, but we can hopefully we can listen to y'all on the street. Same.
Yeah, and
we'd love to come back.
I'm going to talk about getting you back here. We're going to talk about that as soon as we're done with Mouthful. But I want to know, Marie, are you doing any teaching?
I am teaching my own private cooking classes. Uh-huh. I have two that are trademarked. One of them is called I'm Not Just a Piece of Meat, and one is called Move Your Guests to Tears. I have two in the works of being trademarked, Mood Food, which teaches you how to cook according to your mood, and the other one is Cooking with Rhythm. Where it's based on Stomp, the production Stomp, and it's all percussion. It's all about But I'm having trouble getting that one trademarked because the trademark attorney said he needs to put it in a box, and it's so like broad.
Oh,
you know, it's all about like being real, just open.
Now, how do people find you?
My website is www.mariasmrc, which stands for Multi-Regional Cuisine, MariasMRC, all one word, all lowercase, .com.
Okay, MariasMRC.com. And remember, you can always send an email to me at catsmilk@sonic.net, and I can put you in touch with any guests, including the Jungle Love Orchestra. And
I also have a MySpace.
You have MySpace?
Yep.
Okay, great. And how do they find you in MySpace?
Just look up Jungle Love Orchestra.
Jungle Love Orchestra.
MySpace Music.
Great. And also, Mouthful is available as a free podcast on krcb.org, npr.org. But if you don't want to have to think about technical stuff like that, all you do is you go to iTunes, that marvelous creation, put Mouthful in the search bar, my little face will come up, and you can subscribe for free, and it will very neatly deliver things into your inbox once a week. You don't even have to listen to them, but the more subscribers we get here on Mouthful, the happier we are. And on that note, Shelley is jumping up the bit to get into the studio, so stay tuned for Outbeat Salon. Meet me back here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful. We will have chicken moms and maybe even some live chicks in the audience, or in the studio next week here on Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Dinner, dinner,